On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Let me go straight to our first guest, though, because you will have seen in yesterday evening's news a lot of people looking fairly happy in venues like the Helix Theatre at the DCU in Dublin, who have been waiting to finally receive the COVID-19 vaccine that might just pave the way to normality. But let's talk about the rollout of vaccinations and some of the questions you might have with Dr. Lucy Jessop, who is Director of the HSE's National Immunisation Office. Good morning, Lucy.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for taking our call this morning. Good to have you on the programme with us. Before we talk around the nuts and bolts of what you might expect when you're going to get your vaccine, particularly if it's one of the larger vaccination centres, we'll have seen over the week, over the last couple of days, some concern around the presence of new variants. Is there any updated guidance from the HSE as to how effective Ireland's vaccines are against those new variants? Is there any cause for concern there?
Well, no, I think the most important thing to remember is that over 90% of the variant we have is the UK variant at the moment. And we know the vaccines we have are safe and they're effective against that variant. So obviously that's the most important thing, that we have safe, effective vaccines for the variants we have here at the moment. The authorities are keeping a close eye and the virus reference lab in terms of looking for those new variants so that we can respond to those as best we can. And we do know that the manufacturers themselves are also looking at the variants and seeing if there's anything they need to do to make changes to the vaccines in future to see if they need to be updated to be more effective against these variants. But the most important thing, I think, is to be confident that the vaccines we have are effective against the variants we have mainly circulating in Ireland at the moment.
Okay, and let's just have that sort of stated from the outset so that people aren't concerned around some of the presence of newer variants and that they don't think that they're more widespread than they are, because, as you say, only 3 cases of that Brazilian variant identified in Ireland so far, still only a handful of the South African one, no evidence of community transmission of those, so at least people can be confident for the time being that those are generally under wraps. When we see the mass vaccination centres like the one at the Helix that I mentioned and the others that are going to be rolled out in the country, can you talk us through exactly how all of that is going to work? So your GP will give you a call probably and say that their GP's practice isn't big enough to issue a vaccine, so they'll need to bring you to a centre like that. From there, what exactly happens?
So there's going to be a few centres around the country. Most people will be getting vaccinated, the over 70s will be at their GPs. So that will be quite a normal process that people are familiar with in terms of the flu vaccine. So it's only some of these smaller practices maybe might be buddying up with a different practice or going to some of these larger centres. So when you're given a time and a date to go to one of these larger centres, you'll turn up just as normal. They will check to make sure that you're well enough to receive the vaccine at the moment. And then you'll just move through to meet your vaccinator. They'll ask you a few questions to make sure that you're eligible for the vaccine and you're suitable to have it. For example, you're not haven't ever had a severe allergic reaction to any of the things in the vaccine before, and that you're currently well. And then they will just offer you the vaccine, give you the vaccine. It's a very quick procedure into your upper arm, and then you will sit and wait for about 15 minutes to be observed to make sure that you're feeling well enough to go home again. So it's a really very simple and fairly quick procedure. There's all social distancing is observed in terms of keeping you safe, in terms of being safe from COVID whilst you're going through the system. And I think it looked, obviously, from the pictures we saw on the television yesterday, it looked like a very efficient system that was in place, and people seemed very happy with the process as they were getting their vaccines.
So how long is the whole visit then for someone who's going in? If you're someone who's, you know, over 85 and you're going in with a carer, how long is the whole process from getting in the door to getting out the door again?
I think it probably would be, for most people, it would be around half an hour. There are some people we need to observe for half an hour afterwards rather than the 15 minutes. So those people might have more closer to a 45-minute visit. But it is a relatively fast procedure, and we don't want people obviously hanging around for too long in these settings. So we will try and make it as efficient as possible in terms of the visit.
Sure.
But we do need to observe people for some time afterwards.
We already have a question coming in from Martin in Swords. 53106, by the way, is the number for your text if you do have a few questions for Lucy. Martin in Swords wonders how someone like him gets to a vaccination centre because he is isolating alone. There isn't any obvious transport, and that he has an underlying condition. He suffers with heart disease as well. And he's wondering exactly if there's any arrangements for him to be able to get to a vaccination centre.
So that's something that we're working through at the moment. So if people can't make their own way to the vaccination centre, we will be working with partners To try and make sure that we can get people to those centres if at all possible. And then there will be other alternative arrangements if someone is housebound and cannot get out, even with additional transport provided.
OK. Brian in Offaly says the vaccination programme is underway. It appears it's led by GPs. The doctors have provided a list of their patients who are over 85, over 80, over 70, etc. And this makes a lot of sense to create the pop-up vaccine centres. But his question for you, Lucy, is what happens if you don't have a GP and you do fall within that age cohort? He's wondering if there's some sort of CSO census data, or how exactly might they be able to identify people who are inside the age cohort but don't necessarily have a GP to refer them?
There are a few people that don't have GPs, and those people should try and make contact with a general practice, or they could phone HSC Live. That we will make sure that people aren't left behind, and we will be able to offer them appointments as well. But we just obviously need them to make contact with us if we're not available, you know, not aware of them in any way.
Sure. That HSC Live number, by the way, if anyone needs it, is 1850 24 1850. That's open from Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. And that's the way that you can register if you don't have a GP that can refer you on. Maura wonders, is there any guidelines on ventilation for where vaccines are being administered, not in the main centres, but in some of the smaller GP private practices?
In terms of making sure that there's a good flow, keeping people 2 metres apart from everybody, trying to make sure that you have windows open if at all possible, yes, for ventilation. But and like I say, we do make sure that people aren't in the centre for any longer time than they need to be, to make sure that they are kept safe from COVID. And there will be everyone providing the vaccine will be following all the guidelines in terms of hand sanitization, mask wearing, all those kind of normal guidelines that people are following to make sure that everybody going to those centres are kept safe from COVID.
Okay, what hours are some of those vaccination centres working? Because and I only know this secondhand, and I've only heard it from someone else, and I don't know how true it might be, but someone suggested that the likes of the Helix Centre, for example, is nominally finishing at 2 o'clock each day. What hours are they actually putting in, do you know?
I'm not sure in each centre, and I think it would be variable depending on the number of the patients they need to get through, and in terms of the numbers of doctors and nurses they have available to be working. So I know certainly the ones that were the weekend before for GPs, I think they ran all day quite early till relatively late in the day. But possibly the Helix was only working shorter hours for this week. If they have more patients coming through, obviously they can open later if they need to.
Okay, that's fair enough. Can we answer on a totally separate question on the idea of vaccinations for children? I mean, obviously there are no vaccines right now that are licensed or recommended by regulators for use on children because they weren't a sufficient part of the trials, and that all makes perfect sense. People will just wonder what the status might be with children because they are, you know, they're cohort 15 out of 15. They're at the very bottom of the queue, and that makes sense because they're the ones who are least likely to get a, you know, severe infection or severe symptoms of COVID-19. Is there any sign of any kind of developments on the pipeline for a vaccine that might be capable of being administered to children, or is there still a bit of a void on that?
So as you said, two of the three vaccines that we have, the Moderna and the AstraZeneca, are licensed for 18 years and older. Pfizer is actually already licensed for 16 years and older. And there are several of the companies are now doing trials to look at younger children to see if the vaccines are also safe and effective in younger children as well. So I think the evidence will be developing, and we always knew that our strategy was going to have to be sort of adaptive to any of the new evidence that is available. So at the moment, nothing is licensed for children, but that may well change in the future. And as you say, again, obviously children are some of the least susceptible to severe COVID. So our strategy is to very much target those at high risk of morbidity and mortality first. So that is also another reason why the children are the last category at the list at the moment. But As evidence becomes available, then that might be something that might need to be changed in the future.
Sure.
But, so I think that the main thing is that we'll be adaptive.
Sure. One emerging point of policy, which appears to be coming out of the UK particularly, where they've had access to vaccines for slightly longer, but they've chosen to spread them more thinly. So people are waiting longer between their first and second doses. So there's a bigger cohort of the population who've had their first dose. They have found that even a single jab of the Pfizer vaccine, although that wasn't originally what regulators looked at, does still provide you with a very high level of protection against the most significant symptoms of COVID-19. Would there be some scope for Ireland to follow suit, and as long as you know, the resources are still fairly precious, and as long as they're still a very finite supply, should we perhaps be thinking more about delaying a second dose and giving a first dose to more people instead?
Yeah, well, as you say, that is something that the UK have done. That's not something other countries have followed, and that's not in terms of the license documentation for Pfizer at the moment. Most of the people in the main Pfizer trials did have their vaccine within the four-week period that we are using at the moment. So I think we, again, just need to keep our eye on the data and having a look at what is available for us in terms of information and whether we do need to change the strategy. But I think at the moment, it would be best to keep our strategy as it is with the Pfizer and Moderna, and most of the information that we have is with a four-week interval. As you'll be aware, the AstraZeneca vaccine, though, we are sticking again with the license indications and for the EMA, but we are giving that at a 12-week interval because there is good evidence that the first dose of that is very effective and stays effective for 12 weeks. So that does give us, as you say, a bit more scope to be able to offer a first dose to more people.
Sure. We have a question on AstraZeneca from Gronje, who says that when will the AstraZeneca vaccine be reviewed with the new data in terms of efficacy for older people? Are we planning for when it hopefully does get cleared for those people, or are we anticipating making any changes so that eventually it might be administered to those who currently aren't receiving it?
So at the moment, the AstraZeneca vaccine is offered to anybody, say, for example, healthcare workers at the moment who are up to the age of 70, and then anyone 70 and above is being offered the mRNA vaccines in preference to that. Although the European Medicines Agency and the World Health Organization have actually licensed the AstraZeneca vaccine for any age group. But at the moment, the Department of Health have advised that we should be giving the mRNA vaccines to those 70 years and older. So that's what we'll be doing at the moment. But again, if more information becomes available, that could be something that could be reviewed in the future. By then, possibly the over 70s will have all received their mRNA vaccines.
Sure, fair enough. One final question, Lucy, before I let you go, and I know this isn't necessarily within your control because we were at the behest of other factors and other suppliers and everything else. But do you have any firm indication as of yet from either the Department of Health or from the European Commission or any of those who are involved in supply about how many doses we might actually expect to receive in the second quarter of this year, for example?
In the second quarter of this year, the indications are sort of still relatively fluid, so I wouldn't want to make any firm predictions. But I do know there will be quite a ramp up of supply in the second quarter. And obviously, we may well have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine authorised in the mid-March time, which then might be available for the second quarter as well. So I think indications are good that we should have a large amount more vaccine in quarter two, which is really, really good news for us.
OK, well, we'll cross our fingers that Johnson & Johnson candidate does get approved by the EMA in short order. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Certainly very helpful for you to be able to answer some of the questions that our listeners have. That's Dr. Lucy Jessop, who is Director of the HSE's National Immunisation Office, joining us this morning on The Record.